extreme longevity has an unfortunate and inescapable byproduct, madness. When they feel it approaching, most choose to drink from the Seely Hallow, the cauldron, and wipe their memories clean so they can start over. They retain nothing of their former existence and believe they are born the day they drink. There is a record keeper, one who scribes the names of each incarnation each Fae has borne, and maintains a true history of their race. Doesn't the record keeper eventually go mad, too? He or she drinks before that happens, and the duty changes hands. I frowned. How do you know all this, Barons? I've been researching the Fae for years, Miss Lane. Why? The amulet, he said, ignoring my question, is one of the gifts the Unseelie King fashioned for his favored concubine. She was not of his race, and possessed no magic. He wished her to be able to weave illusions for her amusement, like the rest of his kind. But the auctioneer made it sound as if the amulet did more than weave illusions, Barons, I protested. I wanted it to work. I wanted it. He made it sound like it impacted reality. Just look at the list of prior owners. Whether they were good or bad, they were all incredibly powerful. Another problem with Fae relics is they often transmute over time, especially if they are used near or corrupted by other magic. They can take on a life of their own and turn into something other than what they were meant to be. For example, when the sifting silvers were first made, they rippled like the silver of a sun-kissed sea. In those hallowed halls was beauty beyond compare. They were pure, magnificent. Yet now they're...
Black around the edges, I exclaimed, thrilled to have some nugget of knowledge to contribute to the conversation. Like they're going bad from the outside in. He looked at me sharply.
How do you know that?
I've seen them. I just didn't know what they were.
Where?
He demanded. In the Lord Master's house. He stared. You didn't go inside the house?
I was in a bit of a hurry that day, Miss Lane. I went straight to the warehouse. So that's how he's been getting in and out of Faerie. I wondered.
Not following, I said.
With the silvers, a human can enter the Fae realms, undetected. How many did he have?
I don't know. I saw at least half a dozen. I paused before adding, There were things in those mirrors, Barons. Things I saw in my nightmares sometimes. To my surprise, Barons didn't ask what.
Were they open?
What do you mean?
Did you have to uncover the glasses to look into them, Miss Lane?
I shook my head.
Did you see any runes or symbols in the mirrors, on the surface?
No, but I didn't really look. After I'd glanced into the first few, I'd refused to regard the others with anything more than peripheral vision. So you're saying these mirrors are doorways into Faerie? I could have walked into one?
It's not quite that simple, but under certain circumstances, yes. The silvers are one of the Unseelie Hallows. Most believe the first Dark Hallow the King created was a single mirror. A few of us know it was actually a vast network of mirrors, linking dimensions and connecting realms. The silvers were the Tuatha's first method of locomotion between dimensions, before they evolved to the point where they could travel by thought alone, although some say they were created for a more personal purpose of the Dark Kings that history failed to record. At some point in the Fae timeline, this Crouch we keep hearing about cursed the silvers.
When I regarded him expectantly, he shook his head.
I don't know what curse, nor do I know who Crouch was or why he cursed them. I only know that not even the Fae dared to enter the silvers under the direst of circumstances after he'd done it. Once they started to turn dark, the Seely Queen banished the glasses from Faerie, not trusting them in their realms for fear of what they were becoming.
I felt that way about myself lately, turning dark and afraid of what I was becoming. At that moment, I had no idea how light I still was. But then we so rarely understand the value of what we possess until it's gone. I shook off the spell of Barron's story. I needed some sunshine in my life, and soon. In the interim, a lighter topic would do. Let's get back to the amulet.
In a nutshell, Ms. Lane, it's rumored to amplify human will.
If you visualize it, it will come to pass, I said.
Something like that.
Well, it certainly seems to work. You saw the list.
I also saw the long gaps between ownership. I suspect only a handful of people possess a will strong enough to make it work.
You mean you have to be epic already for it to make you more epic? I was supposed to be epic, wasn't I?
Perhaps. We'll know soon enough.
He's dying, you know. I meant the old man. He wanted the amulet to live. When we took it from him, it would be one more inadvertent death on my conscience.
Good for him.
I don't always get Baron's sense of humor, and sometimes I don't bother trying. Since he was being so voluntarily informative, I broached another line of inquiry. Who were you fighting when I called you?
Riordan.
Why?
For talking about me to people he shouldn't be talking to.
Who's Riordan?
The man I was fighting.
I took a detour around the dead end. Did you kill the inspector?
If I were the type of person to kill O'Duffy, I would also be the type of person to lie about it.
So did you or didn't you?
The answer would be no in either case. You ask absurd questions. Listen to your gut, Ms. Lane. It may save your life one day.
I heard there are no male she-seers.
Where did you hear that?
Around.
And which one of those are you in doubt about, Ms. Lane?
Which one of what?
Whether I see the Fae, or whether I'm a man. I believe I've laid your mind to rest on the former. Shall I relieve it on the latter?
He reached for his belt. Oh, please. I rolled my eyes. You're a lefty, Barons.
Touché, Ms. Lane,
he murmured. Tonight I didn't know the name of our unwitting victim, and I didn't want to. If I didn't know his name, I couldn't scribe it on my list of sins, and perhaps one day the old Welshman I'd robbed of his last hope for life would disappear from my memory and cease to trouble my conscience. We rented a car at the airport, drove through gently rolling hills, and parked down a forested lane. I parted reluctantly with my raincoat, and we hiked from there. When we crested a ridge, and I got my first glimpse of the place we were planning to rob, I gaped. I had known he was rich, but knowing was one thing, seeing another. The old man's house was palatial, surrounded by elegant outbuildings and illuminated gardens. It soared, a gilded ivory city, above the dark Welsh countryside, lit from all directions. Its focal point was a tall domed entry. The rest of the house unfolded from there, wing to turret, terrace to terrace. It was topped by a brilliantly mosaicked rooftop pool surrounded by sculptures displayed on pedestals of marble. Four-story windows framed glittering chandeliers and elaborate panes. Amid the lush foliage of manicured gardens, fountains splashed from one exquisitely inlaid basin to the next, and pools shimmered the color of tropical surf, steaming the cool night air. For a moment I indulged in the fantasy of being the pampered princess that got to sunbathe in this fairy-tale world. I quickly exchanged that fantasy for another, being the princess that got to shop with the old man's credit card.
Sale price of $132 million, Ms. Lane,
Baron said.
The estate was originally built for an Arab oil prince who died before it was completed. At 48,000 square feet, it's larger than the private residence at Buckingham Palace. It has 13 en-suite bedrooms, an athletic center, 4 guest houses, 5 pools, a floor of inlaid gold, an underground garage, and a helipad.
How many people live here?
1.
How sad. All this and no one to share it with. What was the point?
It has state-of-the-art security, 2 dozen guards, and a panic room in case of terrorist attacks.
He sounded perversely pleased by those facts, as if he relished the challenge. And just how do you plan on getting us in there? I asked dryly.
I called in a favor. The guards won't be a problem. But make no mistake, Ms. Lane, it still won't be easy. The security system must be disarmed, and there are half a dozen wards to be broken between us and him. I suspect the old man will be wearing the amulet. We may be here for some time."
We made our way down the hill, and were nearly to the house when I spotted the first body, partially concealed by a bank of thick shrubbery. For a moment I couldn't make out what it was. Then I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Gagging, I turned away. It was one of the guards, not simply dead, but badly mutilated.
"Fuck!"
Barons cursed. Then his arm was behind my knees, and I was over his shoulder, and he was running with me away from the house. He didn't stop until we'd reached one of the outlying guest houses. He dropped me to my feet and pushed me back into the shadows beneath the eaves.
"Don't move until I return for you, Miss Lane."
"Tell me that was not the favor you called in, Barons," I said in a low, careful voice. If it was, he and I were through. I knew Barons wasn't entirely on the up and up, but I had to believe such butchery was beyond him.
"They were supposed to be unconscious, that's all."
His face was grim in the moonlight. When I would have spoken again, he pressed a finger to my lips, then moved off into the night. I huddled in the shadows of the guest house for a small eternity until he returned, though by my watch a mere 10 minutes had passed. His voice preceded him.
"Whoever did it is gone, Miss Lane."
He stepped into view, and I smothered a sigh of relief. The only thing I hate worse than the dark is being alone in it. I didn't used to be that way, but I am now, and it seems to be getting worse.
"The guards have been dead for hours,"
he told me.
"The security system is disarmed, and the house is wide open. Come."
We moved directly for the front entrance, not bothering with stealth. We passed 4 more bodies on the way. The front doors were open, and beyond them I could see an opulent, round, grand foyer with a dual staircase that unfurled gracefully up each side and met in a landing suspended beneath a domed skylight hung with a glittering chandelier. I stared straight ahead. The marble floor had once been polished pearl. It was now splashed with crimson, strewn with bodies, some of them women. The housekeeping staff had not been spared.
"Do you sense the amulet, Miss Lane? Are you picking up anything?"
I closed my eyes to shut out the carnage and stretched my she-seer senses, but carefully, very carefully. I no longer thought of my ability to sense oops as a benign talent. Last night, after finishing yet another book on the paranormal, ESP, Fact or Fiction, I'd been unable to sleep, so I'd lain there thinking about what I was, what it meant, wondering where the ability came from, why some people had it and others didn't, wondering what was different about me, what had been different about Alina. The authors contended that those with extrasensory abilities utilized parts of their brains that were dormant in other people. Wondering if that was true, and bored out of my gourd, late-night TV is lousy in any country. I'd fingered my spear and gone poking around in my own skull. It hadn't been hard to find the part of me that was different, and now that I knew it was there, I couldn't believe I'd been unaware of it for 22 years. There was a place in my head that felt as old as the earth, as ancient as time, always wakeful, ever watching. When I focused on it, it pulsed hotly, like embers in my brain. Curious, I'd played with it a little. I could fan it into a fire, make it expand outward, consume my skull and pass beyond it. Like the element it resembled, it knew no morality, didn't understand the word. Earth, fire, wind, and water are what they are. Power. At best, impartial. At worst, destructive. I shaped it. I controlled it. Or didn't. Fire isn't good or bad. It just burns. Now I skimmed it, a stone skipping the surface of a placid sea. A deep, dark sea I intended to keep placid. There would be no stirring of still waters on my watch. I opened my eyes. If it's here, I can't feel it.
Could it be somewhere in the house, and you just aren't close enough?
I shrugged. I don't know, Barons, I said unhappily. It's a big estate. How many rooms are there? How thick are the walls?
109. And very.
A muscle worked in his jaw.
I need to know if it's still here, Miss Lane.
What are the odds of that?
Stranger things have happened. Perhaps the massacre was the result of a foiled robbery attempt.
It certainly looked like an expression of rage. Incensed, inhuman fury. I told him the truth, although I knew it would seal my fate, and the last thing in the world I wanted to do was pass through those doors. I couldn't sense Melusha's stone until I was in the same room with it. I didn't pick up on the spear until I was above it, and I only sensed the amulet once I was inside the bomb shelter door. I closed my eyes.
I'm sorry, Miss Lane, but...
I know. You need me to walk the house. I finished for him. I opened my eyes and notched my chin higher. If there was the slightest chance the amulet could still be in there, we had to look. And I'd thought the graveyard was bad. At least those bodies had been bloodless, embalmed, and tidily interred. Barons made the rooms more bearable for me as we went, by going ahead, entering them first, draping the bodies with sheets or blankets, and when none were available, stowing them behind furniture. Only after he'd secured a room did he exit it and send me in alone, the better to focus on my search, he said. While I appreciated his efforts, I'd already seen too much, and frankly, it was hard not to glance behind a sofa or a chair at the bodies he hadn't covered. They exerted the same gruesome hold over me as the husks left by the shades, as if some wholly irrational part of me thought by staring long and hard enough, immersing myself in the horror of it, I might learn something that would help me avoid the same fate. They have no defensive wounds, Barons, I said, exiting another room. He was leaning up against the wall a few doors down, arms crossed over his chest. He was getting bloody from moving the bodies. I focused on his face, not the stains on his hands or the dark wet splotches on his clothes. His eyes were intensely bright. He seemed harder, larger, more electric than ever. I could smell the blood on him, the metallic tinge of old pennies. When our gazes locked, I jerked. If there was a man behind those eyes, I was a fae. Jet, bottomless pools regarded me. On those glossy obsidian surfaces, tiny Max stared back at me. His gaze dropped, raked over my clingy catsuit, then worked back up very slowly.
They were unconscious when they were slaughtered,
he said finally. Then why kill them?
It would appear for the pleasure of it, Miss Lane.
What kind of monster does that?
All kinds, Miss Lane, all kinds.
We continued our search. Whatever fascination the house might once have held for me was gone. I hurried through an art gallery that would have made any major Metropolitan Museum curator swoon with envy, and felt no more than the bitterness of the man who'd been driven to acquire the spectacular collection, only to hang it in a windowless, vault-like room where none but him could ever see it. I passed over a solid gold floor and saw only the blood. Barons found the old man, who'd paid over $1 billion for the amulet, blissfully ignorant that he'd not only not postponed his death, but had just spent an obscene amount of money to hasten it. Dead in his bed, his head half ripped off from the force with which the amulet had been torn from his neck, chain marks scored into the shredded skin of his throat. So much for longevity. By trying to cheat death, he'd succeeded only in expediting it. Our search was fruitless. Whatever had once been housed there, the amulet, perhaps other oops, was gone. Someone had beaten us to it. The Unseelie Hallow was out there in the world, amplifying the will of a new owner, and we were back at square one. I'd really wanted that amulet. If it was capable of impacting reality, and I could figure out how to use it, well, the possibilities were endless. At the least, it could protect me. At best, it could help me get my revenge. "Are we done here, Barons?" I asked, as we descended the rear stairs. I suddenly felt as if I couldn't get out of the marble mausoleum fast enough.
There's a basement, Miss Lane.
We turned at the bottom of the final flight and began walking toward a set of doors in the wall past the base of the stairwell. At that very moment, they began to swing open. Abruptly, I was no longer in the house at all, but standing on a white powder beach with a warm, salty breeze tangling my hair. The sun was shining. Alabaster birds swooped low, gliding along lapis lazuli waves. And I was naked. 11. Blaine, I snarled. I was naked. He was near.
It is time for our hour, Michaela, said a disembodied voice.
Put me back right now. Barents needs me. How had he so cleanly swapped one reality for the next? Had he moved me or worlds? Had I just been sifted? But I hadn't even seen him or felt him touch me or anything.
At the time of my choosing was our deal. Will you dishonor it? Should I undo my part of it as well?
Could he do that? Rewind time and dump me back into the shade-infested bookstore, crouching before my enemy with too few matches left? Or did he mean to let the shades back in right now, and when I got home from Wales, I'd have to clear it again, this time without his help? I had no desire to face either. I'm not dishonoring it. You are. Give me my clothes back.
We discussed nothing of attire in our bargain. We are on equal footing, you and I.
He purred behind me. I whirled, fury in my eyes, murder in my heart. He was naked, too. All thought of barons and basement doors opening and potential dangers behind them vanished. Nor did it matter how I'd gotten here. I was here. My knees turned to ash. I collapsed to the sand. I looked away, but my eyes didn't. My central nervous system was currently serving another master and had no interest in Will. Will? What was Will? Papers you signed in case you died, that was it. Nothing to do with my current situation. All I needed to do now was entrust my body to the maestro before me, who would play it like no other, stroking it to unimaginable crescendos, plucking chords no man had ever sounded before or would ever match again. A fey prince naked is a vision that renders all other men eternally inadequate. He stepped toward me. I trembled. He was going to touch me. Oh, God, he was going to touch me. Over the course of my many encounters with Blaine, I would attempt repeatedly to describe him in my journal. I would use words like terrifyingly beautiful, godlike, possessing inhuman sexuality, deadly eroticism. I would call him lethal. I would call him irresistible. I would curse him. I would lust for him. I would call his eyes windows to a shining heaven. I would call them gates to hell. I would fill entries with scribblings that would later make no sense to me, comprised of columns of antonyms, angelic, devilish, creator, destroyer, fire, ice, sex, death. I'm not sure why those two struck me as opposites, except perhaps sex is both the celebration of life and the process whereby we create it. I would make a list of colors, of every shimmering shade of bronze, gold, and copper, and amber known to man. I would write of oils and spices, scents from childhood, scents from dreams. I would indulge in lengthy, thesaurus-like entries trying to capture the sensory overload that was Prince Vlaine of the Fae. I would fail at every turn. He is so beautiful that he makes a part of my soul weep. I don't understand those tears. They aren't like the ones I cry for Alina. They aren't made of water and salt. I think they're made of blood. Turn it off, I gritted.
I am doing nothing.
He stopped in the sand next to me, towered above me. The parts of him I needed, those perfect, incredible parts I burned to have inside me, slaking my terrible, inhuman lust, were within arm's reach. I fisted my hands. I would never reach. Not for a fae. Never. Liar, I said. He laughed, and I closed my eyes, lay shuddering on the soft white sand. The fine grains against my skin were the hands of a lover, the breeze at my nipples a hot tongue. I prayed the ocean wouldn't begin to lap at any part of me. Would I come apart? Would my cells lose the cohesion necessary to maintain the shape of my humanity? Would I scatter to the far reaches of the universe flakes of dust borne off on a fickle fey wind? I rolled so my nipples pressed against the beach. As I turned, my thigh grazed the tender, aching flesh of my mons. I came violently. "You bastard! I hate you!" I hissed. I was standing again, fully clothed in my clingy catsuit, spear in hand. My body was cool, remote. Not 1 ounce of passion stirred in what had an instant ago been inflamed loins. I was master of my will. I lunged for him without hesitation. He vanished.
"I sought only to remind you of what you and I might share, Michaela,"
he said behind me.
"It is extraordinary, is it not? As befits an extraordinary woman."
I spun and lunged again. I knew he would only vanish once more, but I couldn't help myself. "What part of no don't you understand? The N or the O? No is not maybe. It is not I like to play rough. And it is never, never, never yes."
"Permit me to tender my apologies."
He was in front of me again, clothed in a robe that was a color I've never seen before and couldn't describe. It made me think of butterfly wings against an iridescent sky, backlit by 1,000 suns. His eyes, once molten amber, burned the same strange hue. He could not have looked more alien. "I'll permit you nothing," I said. "Our hour is up. You dishonored our deal. You promised you wouldn't sex me up. You broke that promise." He regarded me a long moment, and then his eyes were molten amber, and he was the tawny fey prince again.
"Please,"
he said, and from the way he said it, I knew there was no such word in the fey tongue. To the two-a-day, there is no difference between creating and destroying, Barons had said. There is only stasis and change. Nor to these inhuman beings was there any such thing as apologizing. Would the ocean apologize for covering the head and filling the lungs of the man who fell in it? He'd used the word for me. Perhaps learned it for me. He'd used it in supplication. It gave me pause, as he'd meant it to do.
"Please,"
he said again.
"Hear me out, Michaela. Once more I have erred. I am trying to understand your ways, your wants."
If he'd been human, I would have said he looked embarrassed.
"I have never before been refused. I do not suffer it well."
"You don't give them the chance to refuse. You rape them all."
"That is untrue. I have not used the Shiva High on an unwilling woman in 82,000 years.
I stared. Blaine was 82,000 years old?
"I see I have made you curious. That is good. I am curious about you as well. Come, join me. Let us talk of ourselves."
He stepped back and waved a hand. Two chaise lounges appeared between us. A wicker table between them offered a plate with a pitcher of sweet tea and two ice-filled glasses. There was a bottle of my favorite suntan oil stuck in the sand next to the chair closest me, near a pile of thick pastel towels. Sheets of brilliantly striped silk wafted from nowhere, billowed once in the breeze, and draped themselves over the chairs. Salt air kissed my skin. I glanced down. My catsuit was gone, and I was again spearless. I was wearing a hot pink string bikini with a gold belly chain from which dangled two diamonds and a ruby. I blinked. A pair of designer sunglasses appeared on the bridge of my nose. "Stop it!" I hissed.
"I am merely trying to anticipate your needs."
"Don't! It's offensive!"
"Join me for an hour in the sun, Michaela. I will not touch you. I will not, as you say, sex you up. We will talk, and at our next encounter, I will not make the same mistakes again."
"You said that last time."
"I made new mistakes this time. I will not make those either."
I shook my head. "Where is my spear?"
"It will be returned to you when you leave."
"Really? Why would he return a fey-killing hallow fashioned by his race to me, knowing I would use it to kill more fey?"
Consider it a gesture of our goodwill, Michaela.
Our?
The Queen and I.
Barons needs me, I said again.
If you insist I prematurely terminate our hour because you feel I have dishonored it, I will not return you to Wales, and you will still be of no use to him. Stay or go, you won't be with him. And, Michaela, I believe your barons would tell you he needs no one.
That much was true. I wondered how he knew barons. I asked him. They must have trained with the same master of evasion, because he only said,
"It rains in Dublin incessantly. Look."
A small square in the tropical vista opened before me, as if he'd peeled back the sky and palms and torn a window open onto my world. I saw the bookstore through it. The streets were dark, wet. I would be alone there.
"It is raining now. Shall I return you, Michaela?"
I looked at the tiny bookstore, the shadowy alleys to either side of it, Inspector Jane sitting across the street beneath a street lamp watching it, and shivered. Was that the dim outline of my private Grim Reaper down the block? I was so tired of the rain and the dark and enemies at every turn. The sun felt heavenly on my skin. I'd almost forgotten the feel of it. It seemed my world had been wet and gloomy for months. I glanced away from the depressing view and up at the sky. Sun has always made me feel strong, whole, as if I get more than vitamins from it. Its rays carry something that nourishes my soul. Is it real? I nodded up at the sun.
As real as yours.
The window closed. Is it mine? He shook his head. Are we in fairy? He nodded. For the first time since I'd so unceremoniously arrived, I examined my surroundings. The sand was radiantly white and soft as silk beneath my bare feet, the ocean azure, and the water so clear I could see entire cities of rainbow-colored coral beneath it, with tiny gold and pink fish swimming the reefs. A mermaid danced on a crest of a wave before disappearing beneath the sea. The tide tossed sand to the beach in a surf of glittering silver foam. Palm trees rustled in the breeze, dropping lush scarlet blossoms on the shore. The air smelled of rare spices, exotic flowers, and salt sea spray. I bit my lip on the verge of saying, "It's so beautiful here." I would not compliment his world. His world was screwing up mine. His world didn't belong on our planet. Mine did. Still, the sun has always been my drug of choice. And if he would play fair, meaning not try to rape me again, who knew what I might learn? If you touch me, or in any way try to affect my will, our time together stops. Got it?
Your will, my command.
His lips curved with victory. I took off my shades and glanced briefly at the sun, hoping to sear the devastating beauty of that smile from my retinas, scorch it from my memory. I had no idea who or what Vlaine really was, but I knew this. He was a fey, and an immensely powerful one. In this battle where knowledge was so evidently power, where information could keep me alive, where barons pretty much ruled his far-reaching world because of how much he knew, I couldn't afford to pass up a chance to interrogate a fey, and it looked like Vlaine, for whatever reason, might just let me. Perhaps he would lie. Perhaps he wouldn't about some things. I was getting better at sorting through what people told me, learning to hear the truth in their lies and the lies in their truth. Have you really been alive for 82,000 years?
Longer. That was merely the last time I used glamour to seduce a woman. Sit, and we will talk.
After a moment's hesitation, I perched stiffly on the edge of the chaise.
Relax, Michaela. Enjoy the sun. It may be your last chance to see it for some time.
I wondered what he meant by that. Did he consider himself a weather prognosticator? Or could he actually control it, make it rain? Against my better judgment, I stretched out my legs and lay back. I stared at the sapphire sea, watched graceful alabaster birds pluck fish from the waves. So how old are you?
That,
he said,
is anyone's guess. In this incarnation, I have lived 142,000 years. Are you aware of our incarnations?
You drink from the cauldron. He nodded. How long, I wondered, did it take to go mad? My short 22 years were sorely testing me. It seemed forgetting might be a comfort. I considered the ramifications of divesting memory and realized why a fae might put it off. If he'd spent 50 or 100,000 years watching, learning, building alliances, making enemies, the moment he divested memory, he would no longer even know who those enemies were. But they would know who he was. I wondered if any fae had ever been forced to drink by others of their race, to rescue them from the vast, desolate steppes of insanity, or perhaps for more nefarious reasons. I wondered, considering Vlaine had known exactly where I was and what I'd been doing, if he'd been responsible for the massacre at the Welshman's estate. Did you steal the amulet? He laughed.
Ah, so that was what you were after. I wondered. It amplifies the will, Michaela.
Your point?
I have no use for it. My will needs no amplifying. My will shapes worlds. The amulet was fashioned for one like you with no will of which to speak.
Just because we can't manipulate reality with our thoughts doesn't mean we don't have will. Maybe we do shape reality, just on a different scale, and you don't see it.
Perhaps. The Queen suspects such might be the case.
She does?
That is why she sent me to help you, so that you may help us, and together we may ensure the survival of both our races. Have you learned anything about the Shisadu?
I thought about that a moment. Should I tell him? What should I tell him? Perhaps I could use it as leverage. Yes. The palm trees stopped swaying. The waves froze. The birds halted mid-dive. Despite the sun, I shivered. Would you please start the world again? It was creepy, frozen. Things moved once more.
What have you learned?
Did you know my sister?
No.
How could that be? You knew about me.
We learned of you because we were watching Barons. Your sister, who we've since become aware of, did not know Barons. Their paths never crossed, ergo, nor did ours. Now, tell me of the Shisadu.
Why were you watching Barons?
Barons needs watching. The book, Michaela.
I wasn't done yet. The book was big information, surely worth more of an exchange. Do you know the Lord Master?
Who?
You're kidding, right?
No. Who is this Lord Master?
He's the one bringing the Unseelie through. He's their leader. Vlaine looked astonished, no more so than I felt. He and Barons both knew so much, yet were missing chunks of essential information. They were so smart in some ways, and so blind in others.
Is he fey?
He demanded. No. He looked incredulous.
How can that be? A fey would not follow a human.
I hadn't said he was human. He was something more than that. But the way Vlaine had just sneered the word human, as if a life form just couldn't get any lower, pissed me off, so I didn't bother correcting him. You're the one who's supposed to be all-knowing.
Omnipotent, not omniscient. We are frequently blinded by how much we see.
That's absurd. How can you be blinded by vision?
Consider being able to see the atomic structure of everything around you, Michaela, past, present, and part of the future, and exist within that skein. Consider possessing awareness of infinite dimensions. Imagine being able to comprehend infinity. Only a handful of your race has yet achieved such awareness. Consider seeing the possible ramifications of each minute action you might make, from your slightest exhalation upon the breeze, in all realities, but you cannot piece them together into a guaranteed finale, because every living thing is in constant flux. Only in death is there stasis, and even then, not absolute.
I had a hard enough time functioning on my tiny little nearsighted human level. So, what you're saying in a nutshell, I distilled, is that for all your superiority and power, you're no smarter or better off than we are, perhaps worse. A heartbeat stretched into half a dozen. Then he smiled coolly.
Mock me if you will, Michaela. I'll sit at your deathbed and ask you then if you would rather be me. Where is this human fool that fancies himself master of anything?
1247 La Rue. Warehouse behind it. Huge dolmen. He brings them through there. Would you mind squashing it for me?
Your wish, my command.
He was gone. I stared at the empty chaise. Had he really gone to destroy the dolmen through which the Unseelie were being brought? Would he kill the Lord Master, too? Would my vengeance be achieved so anticlimactically, and without me there as a witness? I didn't want that. Vlaine! I shouted. But there was no reply. He was gone. And I was going to kill him if he killed my sister's killer without me. The dark fever I'd caught that first night I'd set foot in Dublin had turned into a fever of a different kind, a blood fever. As in, I wanted blood, spilled for my sister, spilled by my hand. That savage Mac inside me still hadn't found an audible voice, still wasn't speaking with my tongue, but we spoke the same language, she and I, and agreed on critical things. We would kill my sister's killer together.
Junior? Said a soft, lilting voice, a voice I'd never expected to hear again.
I shuddered. It had come from my right. I stared out at the waves. I would not look. I was in Fairy. Nothing could be trusted.
Junior, come on, I'm over here, my sister coaxed, and laughed.
I nearly doubled over from the pain of it. It was exactly Alina's laugh, sweet, pure, full of endless summer and sunshine and the sure knowledge that her life was charmed. I heard the slap of a palm on a volleyball.
Baby Mac, let's play. It's a perfect day. I brought the beer. Did you get the limes from the bar?
My name is Michaela Evelina Lane. Hers is Alina McKenna Lane. I was junior on two levels. Sometimes she'd call me Baby Mac. I used to pilfer limes from the condiment tray at the brickyard on Saturdays. Cheap, I know. I never wanted to grow up. Tears burned my eyes. I gulped deep breaths and forced air in and out of my lungs. I fisted my hands. I shook my head. I stared out at the sea. She was not there. I did not hear the thud of a ball hitting sand. I did not smell beautiful perfume on the breeze.
The sand's perfect, Junior. It's powder. Come on. Tommy's coming today, she teased.
I'd had a crush on Tommy for years. He was dating one of my best friends, so I pretended I couldn't stand him, but Alina knew.
Don't look. Don't look. There are ghosts, and there are worse things than ghosts.
I looked. Behind the volleyball net, buffeted by a gentle tropical breeze, my sister stood, smiling, waiting to play. She was wearing her favorite neon lime bikini, and her blonde hair was pulled back in a bouncy ponytail through the flap of the faded Ron Juan ball cap she'd gotten in Key West on spring break 2 years ago. I began to cry. Alina looked stricken.
Mac, honey, what's wrong?
She dropped the volleyball, ducked under the net, and hurried across the sand to me.
What is it? Did somebody hurt you? I'll kick their frog in petunias. Tell me who. What did they do?
My tears turned into sobs. I stared up at my sister, trembling from the violence of my grief. She dropped to her knees next to me.
Mac, you're killing me. Talk to me. What's wrong?
Her arms went around me, and I was crying against her neck, lost in a cloud of peach shampoo, beautiful perfume, Hawaiian tropic suntan oil, and the bubble gum she'd always chewed on the beach to hide the smell of beer on her breath from Mom. I could feel her warmth, the silkiness of her skin. I was touching her. I buried my fingers in her ponytail and sobbed. I missed her hair. I missed mine. I missed her. I missed me.
"Tell me who did this to you," she said, and she was crying too. We had never been able to stand each other's tears. We'd always ended up crying with each other, then made pacts that we would stand up for each other forever, take care of each other forever. Pacts that I now knew we'd started making when she was 3 and I was 1, and we'd been left in a world that wasn't ours. To hide us, I'd begun to suspect. "Is it really you, Alina? Look at me, Junior." She pulled away and used one of the towels to dry my tears, then dried her own. "It's me. It's really me. Look, I'm here. God, I've missed you." She laughed again, and this time I laughed with her. When you lose someone you love abruptly, without warning, you dream of getting the chance to see them just one more time. Please, God, one more time again. Every night after her funeral, I'd lain awake in my bedroom, down the hall from hers, and called good night, even though I knew it would never be answered again. I'd lie there clutching photographs, recreating her face in my mind in exacting detail, as if I got it exactly perfectly right, I could take it into my dreams and use it as a road map to lead me to her. Some nights I couldn't see her face, and I cried, begged her to come back. I offered all kinds of deals to God. He doesn't make them, by the way. In my despair, I offered deals to anyone or anything that would listen. Something had heard me. Here was my chance to see her again. I didn't care how. I didn't care why. I absorbed every detail. There was the mole high on her left cheek. I touched it. There were the freckles on her nose that drove her crazy, the tiny scar on her lower lip from where I'd accidentally bashed her in the mouth with a guitar when we were kids. There were those sunny green eyes, like mine, but with more gold flecks. There was the long blonde hair, so much like mine used to be. She was wearing the tiny sterling silver heart earrings I'd saved for 6 months to buy her from Tiffany's for her 21st birthday. This was Alina, right down to her toenails painted her favorite summer shade, Cajun shrimp. It clashed horribly with her lime bikini, and I told her so. She laughed and took off across the sand. "Come on, Junior, let's play." I sat, frozen for a long moment. I can't tell you all the thoughts that went through my head then. This isn't real, it can't be. Maybe it is. Maybe it's dangerous. Could this be my sister in another dimension, another version of her, but Alina all the same? Hurry up and ask her questions about her journal and the Lord Master and what happened in Dublin. Don't ask her questions. She might disappear. All those thoughts passed swiftly and left a single directive in their wake. Play with your sister right here, right now. Take it for what it is. I stood and ran across the sand, kicking up white powder with my heels. My legs were long, my body strong, my heart complete. I played volleyball with my sister. We drank Coronas in the sun. I hadn't brought the limes, of course, but we found a margarine bowl of them in the cooler, squeezed them into the bottles, pulp slipping down the frosty sides. A beer would never taste so good again as it did that day with Alina in Fairy. Eventually we sprawled out on the sand and soaked up the sun, toes teasing the edge of the surf. We talked about Mom and Dad. We talked about school. We talked about the hot guys that walked by and tried to coax us into another game of volleyball. We talked about her idea of moving to Atlanta, and how I would quit my job and go with her. We talked about me getting serious about life, finally. It was that thought that sobered me. I'd always been planning to get serious about life, and here I was being exactly who I'd been back then, taking the path of least resistance, the easy way out, doing what made me feel good right now, consequences be damned. I rolled over and looked at her. "Is this a dream, Alina?" She turned toward me and smiled. "No." "Is it real?" She smiled again, sadly. "No." "Then what is this?" She bit her lip. "Don't ask me. Just enjoy the day." "I need to know." "It's a gift from Vlaine. A day on the beach with me." "An illusion," I said.
Water to a man stranded for 2.5 days in the desert without a drink.
beyond refusing, even if it was poisoned. I knew better, but it didn't stop me from trying. So if I were to ask you how you met the Lord Master, or where to find the Shisadu? She shrugged.
I don't know those things.
I wasn't surprised. Vlaine must have lifted her from my memories, which meant she would know only what I knew, and made questions about anything other than experiences I recalled, or my current situation, pointless.
How long have I been here?
As Vlaine's creation, she should know that. She shrugged again. Longer than a human hour?
Yes.
Can I leave?
Yes.
Could I choose to stay?
And have anything you wanted, Michaela, forever.
Alina never called me Michaela. In fact, neither did my parents or any of my friends. Only Vlaine did. Was he behind those sunny eyes? And still I wanted to stay here, lose myself on this beach, in this sun, live this day over and over again for the rest of my life. Forget the rain and the fear, the pain and my uncertain future. I could die happily on a hammock in the sun, 70 years from now, surrounded by lost dreams.
I love you, Alina,
I whispered.
I love you too, Mac,
she whispered back. I'm sorry I failed you. I'm sorry I missed your call. I'm sorry I didn't figure out something was wrong.
You never failed me, Mac. You never will.
Tears filled my eyes. Where had those words of absolution come from? Did the icy Fey Prince understand more about human emotion than he let on? I hugged Alina, inhaled deeply, and memorized every sensory detail I could greedily gather. Then I squeezed my eyes shut and went to that place in my head that was so alien, and I fed the foreign fire. When I'd stoked it hot enough and high enough, I murmured, "Show me what is true," and opened my eyes. My arms were empty. Alina was gone. Vlaine knelt in the sand before me.
Never do that to me again,
I said in a low voice.
You did not enjoy your time with her?
It wasn't her.
Tell me you did not enjoy it.
I couldn't.
Then thank me for it.
I couldn't do that either. How much time has passed?
I would have retrieved you, but I was loath to disrupt your pleasure. You have had so little of it lately.
You said you would take no more than 1 hour of my time.
And I meant it. You chose to stay in Faerie when you followed her across the sand. I understand freedom is a commodity humans prize highly. I permitted you yours.
When I would have argued his underhanded methods, he pressed a finger to my lips. It was warm, strong, but there was absolutely nothing fey in his touch. He was muting himself for me. He felt like a man, a strong, solid, sexy man, nothing more.
Some wounds need salve to heal. Illusion is the great salve. Tell me, has your grief for your sister lessened?
I considered his words and was startled to realize it was true. Although I knew the Alina I had just played with and cried with and hugged and begged forgiveness of had not been real, my day in the sun with her had given me a degree of closure I'd not had before. Although I knew the Alina who'd absolved hadn't been my Alina, her words had comforted me all the same.
Never again, I repeated.
Illusion might be a salve, but it was also dangerous. There was enough danger in my life. He flashed a smile.
Your wish.
I closed my eyes a moment, trying to clear Alina from my thoughts. The sight, scent, and sound of her lingered all around me. From hugging her, I still smelled beautiful on my skin. Later I would relive every moment, and it would comfort me again. I opened my eyes. What of the Lord Master?
The warehouse was deserted. I destroyed the dolmen. It did not appear anyone had been there in weeks. I suspect he never returned to that location once it had been discovered. Tell me everything you know of him.
I'm tired, I said. Our hour is up.
plus some.
Return me now.
Tell me of the Shisadu. You owe me that.
I told him what I knew, that I'd felt it pass me in the streets of Dublin, moving rapidly in a car of some kind, past the bookstore a little over 2 weeks ago. He asked me many questions that I couldn't answer because the mere nearness of the dark book had knocked me out, a fact he seemed to find amusing.
We will see each other again, Michaela,
he said. Then he was gone, and I was somewhere else. I blinked. Although I'd not terminated our time together prematurely, Vlaine still hadn't returned me to Wales. He'd deposited me in Barron's Books and Baubles, probably just to irritate Barron's. It took me a few moments to adjust and focus. Having reality swap so quickly and completely seems to exceed what the human mind can process. We were not fashioned for such a method of travel. And it goes blank, like the static on late-night television for a few seconds. It's a vulnerable time. A person could be ambushed in such a moment. My hand went instantly to my spear. I was relieved to find it was once again there, in the belt draped around my ha-ha, Vlaine, I muttered, pissed. Hot pink bikini. Jackass. It was no wonder I was cold. Then my brain processed what I was seeing, and I gasped. Barron's Books and Baubles had been ransacked. Tables were overturned, books torn from shelves and strewn everywhere, baubles broken. Even my little TV behind the counter had been destroyed. Barron's? I called warily. It was night, and the lights were on. My illusory Alina had told me more than an hour had passed. Was it the same night, nearly dawn? Or was it the night following our theft attempt? Had Barron's come back from Wales yet? Or was he still there, searching for me? When I'd been so rudely ripped from reality, who or what had come through those basement doors? I heard footsteps, boots on hardwood, and turned expectantly toward the connecting doors. Barron's was framed in the doorway. His eyes were black ice. He stared at me a moment, raking me from head to toe.
Nice tan, Miss Lane. So where the fuck have you been for the past month?
12. One afternoon, I insisted. I spent maybe 6 hours there, Barron's. I had lost a month of my life on a beach in the sun with Alina. It was incomprehensible. Had I aged a month or stayed the same? What if I'd chosen to hang out with Alina for a week? Would I have lost a year? 10? What had changed since I'd been gone? I glanced out the window. One thing hadn't. It was still raining.
In fairy, you fool,
he snarled.
You know time doesn't move the same there. We talked about that.
Vlaine promised it would be only an hour of my time. He tricked me, I said hotly.
Vlaine promised. He tricked me, he mocked in falsetto.
What did you expect? He's a bloody fae, Miss Lane, and one of the, what do you call them, death by sex ones. He seduced you and you fell for it. What else did you fall for? Why did you agree to give him an hour in fairy in the first place?
I didn't agree to give him an hour in fairy. I agreed to spend an hour with him at a time of his choosing. He didn't say anything about where it would be spent.
Why did you agree to spend an hour with him at all?
Because he helped me clear the shades from the bookstore.
I would have helped you clear the shades.
You weren't there. We were shouting at each other.
Deals with the devil, Miss Lane, never go well. That's a given. You will not make one again. Do you understand me? If I have to chain you to a fucking wall to protect you from your own stupidity, I will.
He glared at me. I rattled my chains. Wrists. Beam. Chained already, Barron's. Come up with a new threat. I glared back. He tried to stare me down, make me quail and look away. I didn't. Not even with my arms chained behind me, wearing only a string bikini. I was losing the ability to quail, and I would never again be the kind of girl that looked away. Who trashed the bookstore, Barron's? I demanded.
I had a lot of questions, and so far I'd not gotten the chance to ask a single one. The moment he'd seen me, he'd charged me, roughly bundled me over his shoulder, hauled me to the garage, stripped off my tool belt, and chained me to a support beam. I hadn't even tried to fight him off. There was more steel inside Barron's than the post behind me. A muscle in his jaw worked. He turned away, walked to a small metal work table on wheels, and rolled it over next to me. Then he retrieved a long, flat wooden box from one of the many tool shelves.